a little bit of glimpse of what it looks like for us to have to try to be a church in Auckland, New Zealand. Because I'm really not a preacher. And I'm really no longer a minister. What I am is a Christian trying to figure out how to live in the kingdom of God in a country that doesn't want his kingdom to be a part of it. And it's hard. And it's struggling. And it's stressful. And it's exciting. And it fills me. And it fills our family. And there's days we want to quit. And there's days that we couldn't imagine doing anything else. And so what's going on with New Zealand right now is some amazing things that we're really proud of. For 10 years, we have been trying to get into certain systems that didn't want anything to do with God, didn't want anything to do with Christianity. And because I'm a minister, and I think I've told you this before, but in their terms, all they understand is they would think of me as a pastor. A minister is a governmental agent. So anytime I would tell them I was a minister, they'd be like, "Of religion?" And I'll be like, "Yeah." And they're like, "You work for the government?" Like, all of a sudden, being a minister means you're a spy, I guess. I'm a spy. But in their terms, they didn't want anything to do with us. And even now, they want to make it hard with certain aspects of our life. But for 10 years, 11 now, we just worked and we worked. And God opened doors. And he continues to open doors. And so our church made a decision about 6-7 months ago that we could no longer, in good conscience, operate how we were operating because we knew it wasn't sustainable and it couldn't be replicated in New Zealand. And so we made the decision to take our church of about 60 people and separate into 3 missional groups. And so we still operate the same way. We still get together about every 8 weeks to worship, to see who the new people are, the visitors that are coming. And it was a big decision, and it was a scary decision, because we were going to take a group that, ironically, we were the 3rd largest Church of Christ in New Zealand at 60, and we were going to multiply ourselves into 3 missional groups. But you know what happened? We grew. And you know what else happened? Our giving went up. And we started wondering why. Why did that happen? And a few reasons. One, the group started seeing where their money could actually go. They started seeing that this particular group was reaching out to people with mental issues, and so they needed to find a way to specifically address that. And this group over here found that they were working among mainly homeless and addicts and ex-addicts and recovering addicts, and they were like, we need to find a way to address this issue, and how does Jesus speak into that? And then our group was filled with families that were coming because of our school ties, and we had issues of just, how do you be a good parent? And how do you teach your children to care about God and their friends? And how do they deal with bullying and intimidation? And how do they deal with depression as well, which is a big thing in New Zealand? It's a big thing for our church to have to deal with. So let me sidetrack for a second and give you this statistic. Last year in New Zealand alone, over 500 people took their life between the ages of 18 and 35. We have the highest suicide statistic in the world. We live in one of the most beautiful countries in the world, and it doesn't matter. People are taking their life day after day after day. And you start to look at the statistics, and you're like, why is this happening? And you start to notice that it's due to homelessness, it's due to poverty, it's due to abuse, it's due to addiction. And did you know that when we talk about people taking their life, the first thing we like to go to is, well, they must have had some mental issues. Did you know that people in the world who take their life only consists of 50%? Only 50% of people who take their lives. One of my good friends was a minister here in New Zealand. We're not in New Zealand, are we? See, I'm still jet lagged, guys. Here in America, recently took his life. He was 34 years old, and he was one of the best ministers I have ever seen in my entire life at what he did. There's no rhyme or reason for it, but when we go and we dove into it, when we as a church dove into it, when I dove into it, because of past history of knowing things about it, what we realized was there was a connection, and the connection was a feeling of hopelessness. We in the church have one thing that we are good at, or that we should be good at, and that is providing hope. Which means that this room shouldn't be filled with happy people all the time, but it should be filled with honest people who are honest about their feelings and their hurts, as well as their joys. And so we decided we needed to create an environment where people could come in, whether they were a Christian or not, whether they were really seeking God or not, and feel very comfortable to ask some really hard questions. But in return, we had to be willing to give some very honest answers. What sometimes led to hard discussions about the Bible, about Jesus, about how he is transforming our lives and he is transforming the world. But sometimes it had to lead us to going, I don't know, and I don't have the answer. But by doing that, we started dialogues with people that we never could have imagined. Just in the last month, we've been able to sit down with a family who lost their daughter at our school in an asthma attack. And they are a Hindu couple. We've been able to have some great dialogues with them about Jesus and what Jesus is doing in the world. Matter of fact, when that happened, you want to know God at work? We go to a school, our kids go to a school that want to know nothing about God. We've tried to get chaplains in there. We've tried to get some kind of a ministerial counselors in there, not so that we can proselytize, but just so there's somebody speaking into these kids' life when they have issues, when they have questions and they don't feel like they can go to their teacher, just so we can get somebody in there so that when the teachers have problems, that they can have someone they can go to that's not administration. And the school for the longest time was like, we don't want that. We don't want anything religious in our school. So don't bring that in there anymore. They took away Bible in schools, which was a big deal in New Zealand. They didn't allow that to happen in our schools anymore. But when that girl passed away from an asthma attack, I got a phone call that asked if I'd come and pastor everybody in that school. I mean, it was crazy. 11 years of just praying and being faithful and just saying, God, I need you to open doors because I can't open the door. And I spent a week ministering to teachers and praying for teachers. I spent a week ministering to children and praying for children and asking how they're doing and how can we help. And that door has then since been opened where we have found favor in the eyes of the principal, who was the very one who was keeping that all away. We've had good discussions with people that we have friends now that are asking about God that had no desire months ago. So to say that God is still at work 11 years now is an understatement. He's still moving. He's still faithful. But with DC, we had to change the way we looked a little bit. Because we had to finally decide to live a life that looked like the kingdom of God that Jesus talks about in Luke. And that's what we're going to talk about here for just a second. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about DC. But in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus gives us a glimpse into the kingdom. Now, Jesus has been healing people. He's been healing people on the Sabbath. He's been telling parables. And he just gets through telling the parable of the yeast and the parable of the mustard seed. And then he goes on to talk about the narrow door. And at the end of that, some people come to him and they say, Jesus, you need to get out of here because Herod wants to kill you. And then Jesus says, you go tell that fox. Now, let's do a little bit of history. In the Bible, in anything we talk about, if somebody was to refer to you as a lion, you would think what? Mighty? Is that what he said? Powerful. Furious? Yeah. A lion is something, I mean, when someone calls you a lion, you're like, yeah, I am. I'm not, but I mean, somebody would. But they just, you feel like this, there's power in that. But then somebody says, you go tell that fox. Now, I will tell you, I gave this piece of our lesson to DC, and we had some visitors. And you want to know what kind of visitors we have? She was an ex-witch who just recently had found a desire to want to know God and Christ, and he was a wizard. So do with that with what you want. And I'm preaching, and I'm like, when you think of the word fox, what do you think? And I heard people saying, like, fake, phony, and she goes, sexy. And then I looked at her husband, and he had bright red hair pulled back into a long ponytail. And I go, huh, got it. Okay. That's not what Jesus is getting at here, by the way. He's not saying that to Herod. He's saying, you go tell that phony king. You go tell that fake king. You tell that king who thinks he has a kingdom that I know is threatened by my kingdom coming. You tell him I'm not going anywhere. You see, Herod understood kingdom. Herod has a kingdom. He has a powerful kingdom. And he sees Jesus' kingdom coming, and his kingdom looks nothing like his kingdom. Because his kingdom was built on fear and power. His kingdom was built on, let me abuse you and let me make you think that you are not worthy. Let me think that let me break you down so far that you feel like there's no way you can climb to the top. But here comes Jesus' kingdom that says, I lay down my sword for a towel. That I lay down at your feet and I beg for mercy. That I come with love and compassion and I tell you that you are equal to one another. See, New Zealand has this culture that is so like what Jesus is preaching, they don't even know it some of the times. And sometimes, maybe you've had this experience here, where sometimes we just have to open people's eyes to what's already there. We're not teaching them anything new. I think too often we feel like evangelism or Bible teaching or preaching, that I'm having to try to get up here or one-on-one study, try to teach you something new. But I'm really not. I'm opening your eyes to something that's already been there and already been at work, because Jesus has already been before me doing all the work. And so Jesus continues on. And so go back to the parables now. And he says in the parable of the yeast and the mustard seed, he gives us this illustration of the kingdom. And in both parables, he talks about how the kingdom is this small thing that weeds its way into everything without anybody knowing it. That it's subtle. That it's not like a big fireworks, kaboom, the kingdom is here. It just works its way in as it goes. And so I looked up a little bit about yeast because my daughter loves baking. And so now, I don't know what you guys watch on TV, but all we watch is baking shows now. Top Chef and I don't know, so many other ones. She's a good little baker. So I decided to look up what yeast does. Do you guys know what yeast does? I didn't know. Yeast is a weird thing. It smells weird, and somehow once it bakes, it makes the bread smell yummy. And so what it does is it feeds on sugars in flour, and it releases carbon dioxide, making things rise and giving it good flavor. So now think about the words of Jesus saying the kingdom of God is like yeast working its way into the bread. When we work our way in the kingdom, out into the world, we're supposed to be bringing things that makes things rise and be flavorful. We're supposed to be going out, and the kingdom is everywhere, and helping people open their eyes to see that the kingdom of God is not something we bring you into our building to do. There's nothing more about the kingdom of God in here than the kingdom of God out there. And so we in D.C. had to figure out, how do we quit the mentality? And it's funny, almost everybody in our church, in our community, I should call it, didn't come from another church group. We were the first church group they were a part of. And we didn't teach them that these four walls make the church, but somehow history had taught them that. And so the four walls locked them in and made them think, when we gather, well, the only way, how do we reach out to our community? Well, we need to get them to come with us on Sunday. And I don't know how many people you work with that don't like the church. But let me tell you, the last place they want to be on a Sunday is in your church building. And so, you know, we would ask them ideas, because we really wanted this to be a Kiwi-led, Kiwi-replicating church. And they couldn't think past those walls. And so we decided to tear the walls down. And we got rid of the walls. And right now we're meeting at homes, and we have one of our members for their group that asked their group leader. Recently, we have three different group leaders, and we're training two group leaders of ours, hoping that when we get back, we'll multiply into a fourth group. And we've got several others that are interested in starting groups, so we're hoping within the next year or two, we'll have, by the end of that, 7 to 8 missional groups all networked together. But one of them asked, well, if I was to go out and buy a cafe, could we meet there? Dude, can you buy a cafe? And he goes, no, but my mom can. Your mom could buy us a cafe, sure. How much money does your mom have? And they are from China, had gone to Harding University to get their master's degree, had found us through somebody at Harding who had sent us interns, and now are as a part of our missional group. And they don't know how else to serve right now, but what they know is they've got money to help with resources, something that DC's really never had. And so we are thinking outside the box of, okay, well, could we have a cafe that could then work and operate 6 days a week where somebody could meet in there if they wanted to? But in the house groups, what got interesting was the walls broke down and people started thinking creatively, how do we do this? How do we get out and reach the community? And so a few ways have happened that we're helping with. One, we recently started, and I say recently, 3 years ago, started a not-for-profit called the Back to School Project. And my wife runs that Back to School Project, and we have several volunteers. And we give backpacks and all the supplies to kids that can't afford, families that can't afford those resources. Under-resourced families is a huge problem in West Auckland. Poverty is a huge problem in West Auckland. And so the statistics that show that kids who don't start off their school year, and if I had the demonstration she does, it's very effective, but most of these kids show up at school on their first day with a little trash sack and maybe a few things in it. And you ask kids in the school, because we get the schools involved with the givings, you ask a student how they would feel about carrying a trash sack with just a few little things in it versus your friends who have a backpack full of supplies. And they've already started their mentality way down here, and the catch-up's nearly impossible. And so we've got to think through not just how do we supply them with backpacks, but now how do we help the families? And while we're helping the families, how do we help them to understand that we do this not because we're good people and not because we are trying to be seen as good people, but rather because Jesus Christ calls us to love and take care of those in need? That somehow, when he said that his group in Acts, when the people meeting in Acts said there were no needy among them, that somehow that he meant that that's a reality that can happen. I mean, could you imagine that in this room, I have to imagine, in a room this size, there are people that have needs. Some of you have medical bills. Some of you have debt. And yet Jesus, through the book of Acts and through his apostles and through the first church, we see that they were like, we're going to make sure that there are no needs. I've heard of churches saying, we're going to go through and we're going to make sure that no one in our churches has debt. We're going to take away that debt. And they did it. And now the people who once were in debt are now able to contribute more to the church and the work of the church. So I have to believe that there is a dream so big that we could go into a community and try to help make sure that community has no needs. And so we did that, and then we took over a not-for-profit called the Norwest Care Trust, which right now provides food pantries, parcels for people in need. And so you see the combination of what we're trying to do. So the next stage is we need to teach some budget management. We need to teach some life organizational skills. And all these things can be taught to people while using the Bible as a resource of how we're supposed to live as humanity, as how we're supposed to treat each other as humanity. Because that's how the kingdom works. And that's how the kingdom moves. And that's how the kingdom gets in and out of things. And that's how the kingdom grows. And so we have become a community that was once called, a philosopher named Alan Hirsch called it a communitas, or a community with a cause. There was another philosopher that once said that yesterday I was clever and I tried to change the world, but today I am wise, so I will change myself. And that's where the kingdom starts. The kingdom starts from the inside out. The kingdom starts with life change and Jesus changing us from the inside out, transforming us into the people that we need to be. It's changing us so that we can then change the next person into the life Jesus wants them to be, and we help change the next person and the next person. And so with DC, we are on this ever-going change. We are the church that keeps changing. We are the guinea pigs, because we believe there is a better way out there. And not that the way that we're doing church now is wrong, but it's not reaching certain people groups. And so we've got to be able to adapt and change so that we can reach new people for the kingdom of God, so we can see the kingdom of God spread. And so at the end, there was a guy named Dallas Willard, and he said this. He said, the gospel is less about how to get into the kingdom of heaven after you die, and it's more about how to live in the kingdom of heaven before you die. And that's what we do. That's what we're supposed to do. And that's what drew me to Lake Cities, and that's why I've loved you guys so much, and that's why I feel at home when I come here. I'm going to be honest with you, and I'm not just trying to puff you guys up at all. I don't feel comfortable in many churches when I come home. Matter of fact, I don't even feel much like home when I come here. And furloughs get harder and harder. And I get into some churches and I don't recognize kingdom. And I'm not trying to fault them. I'm really not. I hope you hear I'm not. Because I think they're doing good things. But my heart is out in the world. Not to be of the world, but to be in the world. I want to be in the mess. Not every day. There's some days I want to be clean. But most days. Because that's where kingdom is. And that's where God is driving us. And one of the things I've appreciated about Lake Cities is you sit in a place called Trophy Club, but yet you're not afraid to get in the mess. And my prayer for you is the prayer that I have for us, that we will not quit getting our hands dirty, that we will not be fearful of going out and talking and sitting down to a homeless person to ask them their story. Because if you're not willing to hear their story, they don't want to know your story, I guarantee you. Our life is about relationship with all of humanity, even the ones that make us uncomfortable. Jesus was the master of that. He met their need. He returned them to community. And he restored them to sinless condition. And we get to be a part of that. We get to bring heaven down every time that we participate in the kingdom of God. So I am thankful for you guys. We love you guys. We are grateful that we got to be here with you today. There's so much more I'd love to tell you about DC, but we don't have time. But I will say this, that we are where we're at, and we are still doing what we do because of your encouragement, and your prayers, and your love. Because it isn't always easy, and it's not always easy for you either. But yet we keep going because Jesus calls us to, and Jesus is the one who gives us the power to do it. And the more I'm comfortable with that, the stronger I become. I love you guys. And I thank you.